Tonight on Banfield, is it a slap on the wrist for a slap to the face? The Academy takes action and bans Will Smith for a decade. But is it enough? Is it too much? Will this make any difference at all? Plus, Wendy Williams returns to the Big Apple after months of illness and hiatus and social media mystery. But is the talk show queen strong enough for a courthouse showdown? We've got the latest in the battle for her money. Plus, not again. Just when we thought the supply chain nightmare was over, news from China. Another wave is coming. Huge price increases and major delays on everything we use every day. Some people are already ordering Christmas presents so that they arrive in time. We'll tell you what you might want to stock up on before it's too hard to get. And call it the worst excuse ever to get out of jury duty.
I have my sugar daddy that I see every day.
I'm sorry?
My sugar daddy.
My sugar daddy. So, did it work? It's all ahead on Banfield. Welcome to Banfield. The next time you'll see Will Smith on a red carpet at the Oscars, he will be 63 years old. That's if anyone is even watching the Oscars by then. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences tore open the envelope today and announced Will Smith's punishment for assaulting Chris Rock during the Oscars telecast this year. He is banned from all Academy events for 10 years, a decade. No parties, no awards, no Oscars, glamour. Smith had already resigned from the Academy, so it's not clear how much of a difference all of this really makes. And he is still free to haul in whatever price he can command for a leading role, which at one point was between $20 and $40 million. But the jury's out on whether it's worth it for a studio to take that chance. News Nation's West Coast correspondent Nancy Liu has been working this story all day, and she is with us now live from Hollywood. So, Nancy, apart from Will Smith being banned from the events and the parties that the Academy, I guess, has, not just the Oscars, but also the Oscars, so is that it? What's the big deal?
Well, it's probably a pretty big deal to Will Smith, but all kinds of debate in this town about whether it is enough. In a very short statement, Will Smith said he accepts and respects the Academy's decision, which essentially makes him an outsider from the Academy for 10 years, a sanction some are calling the slapback.
Stop! Stop the people!
The golden statue handed to Will Smith on March 27th will stay in his hands, but he won't be allowed to attend another Academy Award show until 2032.
They doubled what I thought was a serious message. So I think the room said we need to do something impactful and get ahead of this ourselves. And then it's up to Will Smith now. What does he do?
In an open letter, Academy President David Rubin and CEO Don Hudson announced a 10-year ban, but also acknowledged, during our telecast, we did not adequately address the situation in the room. For this, we are sorry. There was an opportunity for us to set an example for our guests, viewers, and our Academy family around the world, and we fell short, unprepared for the unprecedented. They went on to say, this action we are taking today in response to Will Smith's behavior is a step toward a larger goal of protecting the safety of our performers and guests and restoring trust in the Academy.
Oh, wow!
Will Smith resigned from the Academy last week, negating any decision on suspension or expulsion.
It's a fitting punishment, but woof, the Academy was not playing.
Film critic Emmanuel Noisette says a full decade was more than what many expected.
This 10-year ban, I mean, it's a little heavy-handed, but you have to understand that they have little choice. I mean, what Will Smith did was unprecedented.
The code of conduct sanctions range from a written warning to permanent ineligibility for future awards, which did not happen.
at the end of the day, he could still be nominated for an Oscar. He could still win an Oscar. That would have sent a much harsher message. And I think what this does is it basically says, look, we really disapprove of you being a part of our organization. So not only do we not want you to be a voting member, we don't want you around, period.
So Will Smith won't be around next year to present the Best Actress category per tradition. And Ashley, guess who people are suggesting should be the presenter for that?
Oh, I don't know, Chris Rock, but I've heard he should be the host, not just a presenter.
Yeah, so we'll certainly see what happens with that, but Will Smith won't be there for sure.
Right, and I think that's a really good thing. I would be really offended if I saw an assailant, you know, get rewarded with yet another big, glossy stage performance. Okay, so Nancy, the next theatrical release that Will is working on is in post-production right now, and that's what happens after you shoot on location. It goes into the edit suite, they put it all together, and then out it comes to the movie theater. But is everybody in Hollywood saying this is going to be the litmus test, like how the public receives this guy and his bankability?
Yeah. Everybody's waiting to see what happens with that. It's a movie called Emancipation, and Will Smith plays a runaway slave. It is already in post-production. Everyone's waiting to see what Apple TV Plus is going to do. It's supposed to be released next year, and it could be released. And what if it is? And given it's another dramatic role, there is buzz about it. Plausible that Will Smith could be in the awards conversation next year. We'll see.
See, that's the crazy part. That's what bugs me. It's like, this is all lip service from the Hollywood execs at the Academy. If he can still go get an Oscar. Well, I guess he can't go get his Oscar. He can be awarded one. He just can't pick it up on stage. So because of that, Nancy, what about the folks in Hollywood and they're weighing in on the decision by the Academy? Are they in the camp that it was too harsh? Are they in the camp that it was just right? Or that, you know, he should have had a way bigger smackdown?
We're hearing arguments on both sides. And because that Academy Board of Governors meeting this morning went for about 2 hours, it was a really long meeting that indicates that there was a lot of debate going back and forth. Yesterday, you know, people were thinking, oh, he'll probably get 5 years. So people probably came in and wanted a lifetime ban. They wanted much more against Will Smith. So maybe that's why we ended with a 10-year ban. But a lot of people unhappy that it did not go further.
Yeah, it's all so Hollywood, right? Okay, Nancy, great job. Thank you. Appreciate it. Nancy Liu doing the job for us out there in L.A. today. So this might have been the most anticipated announcement since the Best Actor category itself was revealed at the Dolby Theater 2 weeks ago. You know that category that Will Smith won right after committing a crime live on stage? Here to help take us behind these headlines and really dig down on this, because there's a big business behind this, make no mistake, is Dana Kennedy. She's the national writer for the New York Post. Ali Stignita is a reporter for Hollywood Life. And Caitlin Becker is a senior reporter for DailyMail.com. So, Dana, I'm going to begin with you. First of all, Will Smith actually released a response to this. And this was also a bit shocking to me because it was only 7 words. And there it is. I accept and respect the Academy's decision. And now he's going on with whatever it is he's doing, you know, in the wake of all of this. But I still cannot understand why the rest of us consumers out here, and say good citizens of the United States who don't hit people we don't agree with, why he can still be nominated, why he can still receive an Oscar. Like, that just seems preposterous.
I think he's been around for so long, and he had a really unblemished career and past as a good guy. He has no history, as we know, of substance abuse, acting out, doing anything like this. He was no, you know, Sean Penn or even Bruce Willis in his prime when he began as a bad boy. I just think they're thinking this was a one-time event, as if he just lost his mind briefly. I think everybody's waiting for the big mea culpa. The question is, will that be on Jada's own Red Table Talk, her little show she has on, not little, but it's pretty well received and pretty watched on Facebook, or will he do something really big with Oprah? Will Smith, despite what we saw 2 weeks ago, is one of the most strategic actors in Hollywood. He's got to be thinking this over very carefully, and he's still playing his cards very close to his vest. That very brief statement, I think, is strategic in itself. He's not letting us know what's going to happen, what he's going to be doing. And Ashley, I do have to bring up the fact that in Hollywood, as serious as this was, there's that axiom, there's no publicity, like there's no such thing as bad publicity.
Oh,
and we've been
Lord.
Talking about Will Smith nonstop for 2 weeks. And Will Smith is sort of a negative reverse superstar at a time when Hollywood is in many ways almost kind of over. The Oscars are over. They're irrelevant. There aren't any really big stars anymore under 40. And he's made a name for himself at this time, whether you like it or not or can accept it.
Sure, he's
got
a million-dollar smile.
This is totally by accident.
I will also say this, that there is a caveat to that. Any press is good press, and all press is good press. And I would say ask OJ, ask Harvey Weinstein. there is a, you know, a tipping point. And when you cross that Rubicon...
But that was murder and rape,
has to decide when you're there.
Murder and rape, so...
I know, and this is assault. So what I'm saying is, it's a violent crime that he committed on a stage in front of 100 million witnesses. So I do think that there is, at some point, there is a limit to the all press is good press. But Ali, do you think that this is a victory for Will Smith? I mean, it's embarrassing for sure. And okay, he can't go to the Oscars for 10 years, but he already decided to sit one out for a political reason. So how is he going to digest this? And does he even need to care?
I think it's really disappointing. I mean, he was very, very seriously going to win that Oscar. It was well known among the community, as you said, within the entertainment community, things are kind of a given, and it was known that he was about to win when he walked up and he slapped Chris Rock across the face. And so I think that the Academy delivering this decision will provide Will a end to the conversation. It will allow him to move forward. Now, at the same time, production is being halted on multiple projects he has been working on. Jojo Siwa just backed out of a movie that he's producing. There is consequences that he's receiving outside of just the Academy banning him for 10 years. And so I do believe that Will Smith is going to reap the consequences of this for more than 10 years to come. I think it is going to affect his career.
So interesting. I also think that when you, and this is a little to Dana's point as well, like when the press really puts the Klieg light on you, the digging begins and the legions of reporters all around the world just start looking for every single thing that they can figure out might inform why this happened. And to that end, our legions at Banfield were able to find a clip from Jada Pinkett's, you know, it's kind of weird. It's from her Instagram, but it kind of shows Will Smith in a sad light. It almost shows him browbeaten a little bit by Jada in her seeking sort of fame and promotion for her Red Table Talk show on Facebook and taking it home to the kitchen and putting him sort of front and center. Let me play it for you. I'll ask you about it on the other side. Caitlin, take a look.
You know Esther Perel is coming to the table. She's going to be at the Red Table. Would you say she has been instrumental in you and I redefining our relationship?
I would say don't just start filming me without asking me.
Oh my goodness.
If you could film
Esther, me. Come help us again, please. I'm still dealing with foolishness.
Don't. Don't just.
Would you say that she helped us heal the hurts that we caused?
My social media presence is my bread and butter, okay? So you can't just use me for social media and not, you know, don't just start rolling. I'm standing in my house. Don't just start rolling.
That hurt me to the core because, I mean, that's their home. You have an expectation of privacy just as a legal level. But there he is asking her pretty sternly, back off. This isn't, and she released it. We have it. The only reason we have that is because it went from her phone out to the public. Caitlin, that really is a little insightful into their relationship in any case.
Ashley, actually, that was live. That was an Instagram live. She walked up to him streaming live on her Instagram in that moment. And this was back in 2019 as she was trying to drum up some excitement for an episode of Red Table Talk. So I actually think that even makes it a little bit worse knowing that she sort of just, right, kind of came up to him out of nowhere and started peppering him with these kinds of questions. And I think as you're looking at a situation like this and we're looking back, and of course, as you said, we sort of trudge up all of these past instances, but you're kind of seeing a bit of the hypocrisy here of how this family puts their life, the good, the bad, and the ugly, out on this show on Red Table Talk, and then has the kind of audacity to be so offended when a bad or ignorant joke gets made at their expense. And I think it shines a light on what an overreaction. I mean, we know it's assault, we know it was upsetting, but what a gross overreaction it is for a couple who regularly opens up their personal lives to the public.
Yeah, I think it was Bill Maher a week ago who said, we can't expect to be able to remember all of this, you know, I might be wrong with the comedian, but it was a funny joke saying we can't expect to, you know, can't be expected to remember everything in your private life, including your condition. All right. So I want to show another tape, Dana. I want you to comment on this as well. And I didn't know about this, much like I didn't know that, Caitlin, that was a live Instagram. I thought that was a tape she released. It's even worse. You're right. That she just, you know, showed up out of the blue without asking. Just did it. Okay, so she turned 40, and I guess it took 3 years for Will to put the party together for her. And he'd worked very hard, from what I understand, at crafting a massive event for over the course of 3 years for Jada. And I'm going to play the tape, and I think what you're going to see in there is her level of thankfulness to Will. So take a peek.
Your 40th birthday was my low point. The day after her 37th birthday, I hired a team to orchestrate her 40th birthday. I hired a documentary team. I traced mommy's family roots. Her 40th birthday was going to be my thing.
It was going to be a splash.
It was going to be a splash. Mary J. Blige. Mary J. Blige performed. I debuted the film, all of that. It was going to be the thing that lifted her out of this midlife crisis. And it was going to be my deepest, most beautiful proclamation of love. And we did it. And then when we got back to the room, it was me, you, and mommy. And we were talking about the next day. And there were things planned for the next day. And she said, I'm not sure I want to do anything the next day. And she's told me that the party was the most ridiculous display of my ego.
Ooh. So I don't even know what to make of that, Dana. The fact that I'm watching like a counseling session, it seems, which I don't want to be a part of. I guess people do, but I just think that stuff should really be left behind your doors of your home. But just the fact that he mentioned that he'd done all this work, and her response was that it's all about you. I threw my own 40th birthday, so I'd have been thrilled if somebody had baked me a cake. But what does it say to you, like, when you see that kind of dynamic?
Well, two things. One, I kind of think Jade is a bit of a witchy woman. I mean, she seems to have a really amazing effect on men. I mean, if Will really did get up and slap Chris Rock because she was so upset, you know, that's a lot of power to have. And, you know, August Alsina, the friend of Jaden Smith, her sons that she had the affair with, he said later that he was so in love with her. He was devoted to her, he had this profound love for her. So, you know, Jada knows how to land them, and she's got something going for herself. But I think more importantly, with what we just saw there, that's part of their brand, is being sort of raw, sort of being out there. And, you know, you forget with a lot of people that make it to the top in Hollywood, Ashley, they come from really often really rough beginnings. I mean, we know that Jada was partly raised in the Baltimore hood. Her mother had her when she was 18, was a heroin addict for years. And, you know, Will's father was, you know, beat his mother. These are people that come from raw, kind of out there families. So to expect them to be like, you know, some Boston Brahmins on Beacon Hill, you know, I think we're seeing what they're really like. It doesn't shock me all that much. And I also think, too, they're actors and performers and really good ones, but they know that the world is moving more to reality, and that's what gets the money.
True.
That's what gets the attention.
Think no matter,
like the Kardashians.
I still think no matter your cultural upbringing, there's love and there's respect and there's appreciation no matter what your socioeconomic background. I sure didn't see it at that table or that other clip, but There's something else that she said, and I'm going to just read it, because I don't know if this was pulled off of Red Table and you can't find it anymore, but I couldn't find the actual clip. But we have the transcript of it. And Allie, I'd love you to just comment on this. This is what Jada had to say about her marriage to Will. I really didn't want to get married to Will Smith. I was crying down the freaking aisle. I was under so much pressure, you know, being a young actress, being young. I was just like pregnant and I didn't know what to do. I never wanted to be married. I guess that I understand that feeling, especially if you're young and pregnant and getting married against, you know, what your judgment is or your better wishes at the moment. But making that public is just an extraordinary humiliation. I almost start to think I get it. I get how one eye roll maybe could make Will Smith want to hit someone.
Yeah, Ashley, the second half of that video clip, actually, if you're able to find it and watch it, is even more heartbreaking when Will Smith says that what he looked forward to most since he was 5 years old was the day that he could walk down the aisle and marry the love of his life. And he had no regrets that day. And Jada sat there across the table and admitted to him that her mom forced her down the aisle. And I, not only is that heartbreaking for Will, it's heartbreaking for their two children. It's heartbreaking for their son, Jaden, who she was pregnant with at the time. And I'm not entirely sure why she felt the need to air this grievance that she had with the public, with him.
It's fine to share it amongst yourselves, but my Lord, to share it with the public, how I feel sad for him.
Yeah.
Okay, I only have time for this here, but we touched on it briefly, and that is August Alsina's book. Last night I ran a big story on it, that there was a battle, a publishing battle for, you know, a six-figure, you know, payout for him to whoever would win that deal. And today the story's changing. Caitlin, apparently now he has, you know, released something on his Instagram saying, what would be the need to write a book about my supposed sex life with anybody ever in life? If you are looking for that kind of entertainment, read the book called Holy Bible while you're at it. I'm not sure about the syntax, but I think I get it. It sounds like, Caitlin, is he not doing the book now?
It absolutely sounds like he is not doing the book now. I don't know if the machine sort of behind the Smith family sort of got to him and convinced him not to release the book, but he certainly acted as if it was never in the works. And we've heard from many, many sources that there was this six-figure deal at least being batted around. You know, but evoking God several times in this Instagram post, shutting down these supposed rumors, seemed a little trite and a little hypocritical considering he references it in a recent song, and we're talking about an affair, an extramarital affair that this person had with someone who was in a relationship.
Shouldn't come at your neighbor's wife is in that Bible.
Evoking the good Lord right there maybe isn't the best
move.
Maybe
you didn't read it.
Apparently. Yeah, this just seems obnoxious.
Dana Kennedy, Ali Stagnita, Caitlin Becker, thank you to all three of you. I appreciate it. Listen, it's interesting chat, but it's also really big business. Just like any other industry, it's worth hundreds of millions and upwards of billions as well. So good conversation. Thanks, ladies.
Thank you.
So for months, she was in seclusion down in Florida while her talk show was in limbo. And now Wendy Williams has reemerged in New York City. And she says she wants access to her money. After the break, why the talk show queen has to fight for it in the first place, and what is in store for her TV future. Welcome back. She's been a social media mystery for months now, but now she's officially a court case. Wendy Williams is back in New York City and preparing to do battle in a New York court. Sporting an $8,000 Louis Vuitton handbag, the one-time queen of talk TV claimed on Instagram simply that she's ready. But it could be a tough battle ahead. Her ex-manager says that Wendy needs a guardianship and has petitioned the court as such. That's him on the left. But Wendy says she's fine and she just wants access to her money. Something that she has repeatedly mentioned, actually in a 4-minute rambling video post on Instagram last month. Take a look.
I want my money. This is not fair. This is not fair. This is not right. And this is not fair at all. This is not right. And certainly this is not fair. All I want to know is, where is my money? This is not right. And certainly, this is not fair. This is not fair.
Our senior story editor, Paula Froelich, spent 10 years at the helm of Page Six, and she's been working her sources on this story all day. She joins me now live. So I watched that clip, and we watched it, you know, a couple of weeks ago when it first hit Insta. But the more I see it, I really do question her, you know, her mental faculties and if she's okay, and maybe if there is something to this guardianship request. What are you finding out?
You know what, Ashley? Here's the deal. She is back in New York. She is fit and she's ready to fight. And since that video came out, she's had a little bit of a come to Jesus. It's kind of a change of heart. So I want to go back to that video, but it's a specific section where she mentions Wells Fargo. So let's see it, and then I'll tell you about it.
When I began asking questions about my money, suddenly Lori Schiller has got no response, and Wells Fargo has no questions and answers with regarding my money. This is not fair. Lori Schiller and Wells Fargo, please let me have access to my money.
All right, so listen, it's been 2 weeks since she filmed that, and she's kind of had to come to Jesus, and she said, you know what, I get it. Now her beef is not really with the bank. She understands. If somebody comes to the bank, somebody like Bernie comes to the bank, and he's been working with the bank on her behalf, and says, hey, listen, she's not capable anymore. She's, you know, mentally out of it, whatever. They have a legal responsibility to actually say, okay, let's press pause. Because if they don't, and they just keep letting her spend the money, and it gets all out of control, and she loses all her money, then they're kind of on the hook. And they're now just saying, hey, let's just let the court sort this out. And she's like, yeah, I will let the court sort this out. And I want it to go down now. And she understands that the beef now is just with Bernie.
Okay, so let's talk about Bernie. It's Bernie Young. He was her manager, as I understand it, only for about 2 years, but was fired. And I can't remember when it was, but I think earlier this year. Mm-hmm. Why is he so engaged in her life like this?
You know, Ashley, there's a lot of theories. And let me tell you mine. Because after talking to a bunch of people who met Bernie, who thought he was a perfectly nice guy, all this stuff, Bernie is 75. He's at the end of a very long career. He was a producer. He worked for Rosie. He worked for Martha Stewart. And then he managed Wendy for 2 whole years. That is it. This is not a long-term employee. You know, it's a lot of money. If you're head of conservatorship, you get the checks, just as Jamie Spears, Britney's dad. You are control of everything. And, you know, it's control, it's money, and it's also terrifying. Ashley, I mean, you, me, everyone watching this should be terrified about this. Imagine
well, it could also be altruism. We should give the benefit of the doubt as well. He could deeply care about her other people around
her. But Ashley, let's be honest. Somebody works for you for 2 years. 2 years, that's it. Yeah. And then they're going to go to your bank and say, no, she's out of it. I want control of the money. It just, it boggles my mind. It really does.
The most positive thing, I have to be honest, the most positive thing I saw is that she's out of the wheelchair. So when she was, you know, taking these pictures and walking out of her apartment out of a wheelchair, at least her physical health might, you know, I don't know if it's a blip, but at least her physical health seems better. Paula Froelich, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you making all those phone calls and getting the inside scoop, as always. Paula Froelich, our senior story editor, still to come. A brand new nightmare for U.S. shoppers, higher prices, and longer wait times for all of those things that you buy every day. We're going to tell you what is behind this and, more importantly, what you can do right now to get ahead of the game and avoid it. Welcome back to Banfield. Just when we thought the U.S. economy was on its way back, it appears that the wheels may have fallen off again. Another huge supply chain nightmare is just around the corner, which means higher prices, longer wait times for basic things, the things that we buy every day. The surprising reason? COVID, something else we thought was in the rearview mirror. But in China, it is not in the rearview mirror, and A lot of things we like and want are made in China and shipped to us. And right now, China just happens to be in the middle of its worst COVID outbreak since the coronavirus began in Wuhan back in January of 2020. Yes, let that sink in. It's bad over there. The entire city of Shanghai, and that's 26 million people, they are currently in a lockdown, and outbreaks continue to rage in other parts of the country too. China has a much stricter COVID policy than we do here in the U.S. They are much, much quicker to shut things down when cases start to pop up. And when they do, it hits us hard, especially since the war in Ukraine has already piled on to those shipping global shipping route issues that we've been experiencing. And it's now expected that the new outbreak in China is a tipping point. So the flow of all the gadgets and furniture and the building supplies that we expected would open back up and flood back into the U.S., think again. But there must be a way around this new looming problem, especially since we now have 2020 hindsight. Pardon the pun. For that, I'm joined by Julia Neshwat. Julia is the former deputy assistant to the president for Homeland Security and Resilience. She worked in four previous administrations, and she's also a distinguished fellow at the Atlantic Council Global Energy Center. Julia, thank you so much for being here. You would think we'd have figured this out, that we'd have figured out a workaround since we've been living this for 2 years. Have we not?
You're exactly right, Ashley. A lot of lessons learned here. You know, you've got COVID crisis, you know, it ebbs and flows. You have the Russia-Ukraine crisis. It's now more than ever, it's just so important to stay informed. And, you know, as you were saying, a lot of this is made in China. And, you know, I would say one of the silver linings, though, from COVID is it truly has exposed the fragility of our supply chains in the United States. Even things as simple as masks and gloves can very quickly become a national security issue.
Yeah, I remember when it was toilet paper and hand sanitizer and people were fighting each other at Walmart for it. Okay, so for the people who are watching right now, let's do everybody a big service and best we can predict what it is we need to be aware of. Like, what should we be buying now if we are about to hit another big supply chain problem and another big, you know, episode of empty store shelves? How can we get ahead of the game? What are the tips?
Well, in addition to staying informed, I would say that, you know, take that extra time to read the labels now. If it says, you know, made in China, put it down, made in the U.S., we've got to be able to really help promote within our communities and at the state level, at the federal level, to be able to really encourage more manufacturing and development here in the United States. We no longer, believe it or not, produce things like penicillin and antibiotics. Believe it or not, 80% of our oncology meds are no longer available here. Computer chips, batteries, all controlled by China. So again, I would say that we really need to be more vigilant about where things are made from.
So Julia, is this going to become like a tipping point for us in how we do business in the United States? You know, for decades, we were shipping our jobs out to anywhere else that was cheaper. Are we now going to start realizing how much that's come back to bite us and perhaps start considering maybe not expensive labor here in the U.S., but perhaps somewhere closer to home, like a truck's drive away, maybe Mexico?
Absolutely. In fact, there are other countries where we could turn to that are more aligned, you know, that don't even have human rights violations, places like Japan or India or even Central America, where we could have a better supply chain pathway, if you will. But you mentioned truckers. I wanted to say it's another area where I think we could do better. In fact, some states are considering, you know, to increase the staffing by lowering the age requirement to be a trucker. You can lower it from 21 to age 18, which could be of help. But of course, the other challenge, though, is gas prices today. So that's going to still be a conundrum.
Which is why I brought up the war in Ukraine. I only have a couple seconds left, but I have to ask you this because I am always very prepared for Christmas. I do my Christmas shopping usually in October. I started anyway, but now I'm seeing headlines in all the newspapers that say you might want to get even more of a jump. And I know people who were ordering presents in September of last year didn't get them till January. Does that mean, I'm looking at my watch, we're 9 months away till Christmas. Do I have to start doing this now? Do I have to actually start ordering presents now?
Unfortunately, to be vigilant, I would say absolutely start thinking about it. But again, I would again emphasize, think about where it's been made, and that could help expedite these type of presents overall, because it might become cyclical, if you will. I mean, think about the next geopolitical crisis or the next COVID variant that will come around. So if it's not one thing, it'll be the other. But we really have to take in consideration about the truly onshoring and that made in the USA brand.
Good point. If it's one of those cheap dresses, order it now. And if it's one of those maybe real iPhone chargers that, you know, perhaps isn't manufactured over there, you can maybe give yourself a few months. Thank you so much for the advice. I can't believe we're even having this conversation. Julia, I thought we were in the clear. People can start building again and doing the things that they were hoping to return to. And here we are over 2 years later. Socked with it again.
It is a global economy, Ashley, so it's going to take time, but I think we'll get there.
I appreciate it, and I hope you'll come back as a guest. Thank you so much for your wisdom.
Thank you.
Julia Neshwat joining us live. And still to come, Russian soldiers. They wrote a special message on the missile that they fired at that train station in Ukraine, the one that killed 52 people, including 5 children. I don't know if you can speak Russian, but even if you can't, the message is crystal clear. What they meant is, it says, for the children, for the children. That's what it says in Russian, for the children. What kind of sick and twisted minds would stoop to such an evil low? That's next. Welcome back to Banfield. Every day they sink lower, even when you thought it wasn't possible, but they have done it again, the Russians. They fired off missiles at a train station packed with 4,000 people, mostly civilians, who were trying to evacuate the eastern part of the country after being warned that they should do so. Images from the Kramatorsk train station are just horrendous. About 52 people were killed, 5 of them children. Nearly 100 more are in the hospital. The station was an evacuation hub, so the majority of the dead were actually women and children. The part about the children, though, is key because at the train station, authorities found a huge piece of unexploded ordnance, or partially exploded ordnance. And the Russians had written a message on it before they fired it off. And translated into English, the message reads in white paint, for the children. Now, at first, people assumed that the Russian who wrote that message intended that that bomb would just do that, take out children. But some analysts said that it's possible that phrase actually translates closer to in retaliation for an attack on children. But regardless, it's unclear which children Russia claims to be avenging. Certainly there was no mistaking that it was aimed at the train station, which was filled with children. Condemnation from world leaders was quick. President Biden accusing Vladimir Putin of horrific atrocity. The UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson saying the attack was unconscionable. And the French President Emmanuel Macron calling it unthinkable. But it was the head of the European Union who may have made the biggest statement. EU President Ursula von der Leyen, who met with Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky in Kyiv. Just take that picture in. This is a war zone. And she went there. And during their meeting, she handed Zelensky a questionnaire to fill out. And I know that may seem unusual, but it's what the questionnaire represents that is so important.
Ukraine belongs to the European family. We've heard your request loud and clear. And today we're here to give you a first positive answer. In this envelope, dear Volodymyr, there is an important step towards EU membership. The questionnaire that is in here is the basis for our discussion in the coming weeks. It is where your path towards Europe and the European Union begins. So for you, dear Volodymyr,
thank you so much.
I want to give you that.
Thank you so much.
This is the questionnaire.
We'll be ready with answers, Ursula, in 1 week.
The EU seems to be prepared to give Ukraine a pathway to membership, and it is the mutual defense clause that is contained within the EU's charter that's key here. That clause provides that if an EU country is the victim of
armed aggression on its territory, the other EU countries have an obligation to aid and assist it by all the means in their power. And while that sounds a whole lot like NATO's guarantees to one another, it is slightly different because the same clause in the Charter also says it does not affect the neutrality of certain EU countries and is consistent with the commitments of EU countries which are NATO members. So theoretically, EU members who are also NATO members, they could still opt out of a fight. For his part, Zelensky says he hopes they won't. He recently sat down with 60 Minutes for an interview set to air this Sunday, and here's some of what he said about the values that he is fighting for.
We are defending the ability of a person to live in the modern world. They say we're defending Western values, and I always say, well, what are Western values? Someone who lives in the United States or Europe, do they not like children? Do they not want their children to go to university? Do they not want their grandfather to live for 100 years? We have the same values. We are defending the right to live. I never thought this right was so costly. These are human values, so that Russia doesn't choose what we should do and how I'm using my rights. That right was given to me by God and my parents.
We'll have to wait to see what happens when President Zelensky hands in that questionnaire next week. Still to come, joining the military. It's one way Americans can serve their country, but there is another way that we can all do our civic duty as well, and you can still enjoy the comforts of home. It's called jury duty. I'm not kidding. After the break, what a Florida woman actually told this judge to get out of jury duty.
I have my sugar daddy that I see every day.
I'm sorry?
My sugar daddy.
How do you suppose this one turned out? That's next. When Nicholas Cruz opened fire on his fellow students in Parkland, Florida, he set in motion a chain of events that would lead to a guilty plea and a death penalty case. He is about to be sentenced for 17 first-degree murder charges and 17 more attempted first-degree murder charges. And for that, he needs a jury. But picking a jury in such a high-profile case is tough, given the media exposure from that school shooting. So you could imagine the silence that fell over the courtroom when a prospective juror, a Florida woman identified only as Miss Bristol, had this excuse as to why she couldn't possibly do her civic duty and sit on a jury for this case.
I need to figure out something. I have my sugar daddy that I see every day.
I'm sorry?
My sugar daddy.
Okay, I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about. But
well, I'm married and I have my sugar daddy.
Okay.
I see him every day.
All right.
That happened. That actually happened. Surprisingly, Miss Bristol was dismissed from the case. Usually it's about hardship or extreme inconvenience, but in this case, it might have been about something else. I don't know. This jury selection is expected to take about 2 months, and the sentencing for Cruz is expected to take an additional 4 months. That's how serious this is, and he could still face the death penalty even though he pleaded guilty to those murders. But let's be clear, folks. Please don't ever try to get out of jury duty. It is the least you can do. You get sushi and lattes, and you don't have to go overseas and fire a gun, and you can serve your country that way. Time now to turn things over to Marnie Hughes and Leland Vittert for their special report. I get on my soapbox all the time when people ask me, what's the best way to get out of jury duty, because I'm a legal correspondent? And I usually tell them to go and enlist, because they won't have to serve on juries if they enlist in the military and they go off and fight.
Yep, it's the better of the options, and that was a window into a world I don't think we wanted to see.
You think she was telling the truth?
I actually do, because she was quite flummoxed about trying to figure out, you know, her schedule.
Right.
And she wanted to just sort of put it out there.
Are you clear? I have this to do.
I was going to give her points for creativity, but there you go. Ashley, have a great weekend.
Thanks, guys. Right. Have a good show.